When it comes to proposed changes to net neutrality, politicians and tech companies are interested. But according to John Oliver, everybody should be.
Net neutrality is actually hugely important. It's why the internet is a weirdly level playing field. And startups can supplant established brands. That's how Facebook supplanted MySpace, which supplanted Friendster, which supplanted actually having any friends.
And the Chicago Bears had another rough Sunday.
Trubisky on fourth down. Will go far side. Tip intercepted by Graham. Inbounds. Could go. Graham. Inside the 20.
That's audio from Fox Sports. The Bears clinched a losing record for the fourth straight year. We'll talk all things football with WBEZ's Cheryl Ray Stout, plus get up to speed on what's happening in Illinois politics. I'm Brian Moline, in for Nyla Boodoo. Stay with us on the 21st. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Moline, in for Nyla Boodoo today. It all officially started yesterday. Candidates hoping to win state and local offices next year submitted their paperwork to the State Board of Elections. They have until Monday to do so. Of course, the actual campaigning has been going on for a while now. Eight Democrats and one Republican plan to run for attorney general after incumbent Lisa Madigan said she would not seek another term. Candidates for governor also filed paperwork yesterday. Seven Democrats say they want to be the ones to unseat Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. His likely primary challenger, Republican State Representative Jeannie Ives, has also said that she will file the necessary paperwork before next Monday's deadline. And, of course, Congressman Luis Gutierrez in Chicago is expected to announce today that he will not run for another term after 24 years in office. As always, there's a lot going on. I'm joined now by two reporters who can help us understand what's behind the headlines. Joseph Bustos writes about state affairs, politics, and transportation for the Belleville News Democrat, and Tony Arnold is a political reporter for WBEZ. Joe and Tony, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tony, let's start with you. Yesterday, we saw pictures of candidates and staffers lining up at the Illinois State Board of Elections in Springfield. It kind of looked a little like Black Friday in some ways. What were they there to do?
This is a kind of an age-old tradition at this point. Any campaign just to get on the ballot in Illinois has to submit a certain number of signatures from primary voters in the state. So whether you're House Speaker Michael Madigan, who's been doing this since the 1970s, or whether you're a first-time candidate running for judge, they all have to go through the same show. Now, sometimes there's a staff member doing it, filing the petitions on their behalf, but in Illinois, at least, you still have to collect signatures. For instance, for governor, it's between 5,000 to 10,000 that have to be submitted. Usually, you want some spare signatures just in case some of those are found to be ineligible, because your opponents do go through those signatures with a fine-tooth comb, anything to knock you off the ballot if possible. It can be, you know, for as much of an arcane process as this can be, it's still important in that. A campaign can end before it even begins if those signatures aren't found to be valid. So this is just kind of an age-old system, and they basically have a week now to turn those signatures in. They have until next Monday.
Very good. Joe, candidates for governor have already been campaigning for months, especially on the Democratic side. We're now about 4 months from the primaries on March 20th. What are some of the big ideas that you're focusing on in your coverage, both on the Republican and the Democratic sides?
Well, I think there's going to be, obviously, if there's any plans for trying to reduce property taxes, that's always a big issue that comes up. And down here, there's the issue about getting a place like Granite City Steel up and running again. They've been idled since December of 2015 or early 2016. So it's getting down in downstate. There's always the issue about jobs and property taxes, like any other place in the state.
And Tony, yesterday there was some noise on the Democratic side. Candidates J.B. Pritzker and Chris Kennedy released portions of their tax returns. We now know how much money they made last year. State Senator and fellow candidate Daniel Biss has been criticizing them for this release, saying they really haven't been transparent about their finances. I know you reported on this. Is it a fair criticism?
Yeah, this is not a requirement for candidates to release their taxes, but it has become pretty customary in the last few cycles for candidates to release them, particularly candidates who are not wealthy, to be critical of those who candidates who are wealthy. This was a big issue in 2014 when Pat Quinn was challenged by Bruce Rauner. Quinn made Rauner's income taxes a campaign issue throughout the entire summer and fall, and ultimately Rauner released just the top pages of his tax forms, which show they show, you know, that his annual income that he reported to the federal government and the state government for how much he can be taxed. Yesterday, Chris Kennedy and J.B. Pritzker, the Democrats now running for governor, two of them at least, did the same thing. They released the top forms of their income taxes. Kennedy's showed that last year he made $1.2 million. Pritzker's showed that last year he made almost $15 million. He also released the two previous years' top pages showing that he made about $10 million and $3 million the years before that. What we're missing by not seeing the rest of those tax forms, not seeing the schedules that also go along with filing your taxes, is really just if there's more there or what more there is. Because, for instance, the Pritzkers we know have trusts, and the where a lot of their money is kept, a lot of their wealth, and this is only a fraction what we've seen from J.B. Pritzker's campaign, or his filings, I should say, really is only a fraction of what Forbes magazine estimates that he's actually worth. We've seen about, 25, almost $30 million for J.B. Pritzker in the last 3 years. Forbes estimates that he's worth more than $3 billion. So there's a lot that we aren't seeing from the tax forms there. State Senator Daniel Biss, who mostly has released 5 years of his full taxes, showing that he mostly gets his income from his salary as a lawmaker, is making this a very large campaign issue for his own campaign, saying that if Democrats want to be the party of transparency, if they want to throw bombs or criticize Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, for not releasing any of his taxes, then J.B. Pritzker and Chris Kennedy should be showing all of theirs, or else they're hypocrites, is what he's saying.
You know, and I guess, you know, Tony, I'll ask you this one as well. You know, there's been so much talk about this being possibly the most expensive governor's race in history. At this point, does it look like we're headed for a governor's race where it's, multi-millionaire Governor Bruce Rauner squaring off against billionaire J.B. Pritzker, or are we a little too far away to assume that?
I think it's early to be saying that, but I will say that I think a lot of what you're seeing, just focusing on the primary at this point, if you're looking at just Democrats, right, just Democrats who are going to vote in the March primary next year, personal wealth has been one of the top issues for these candidates. You're seeing almost everywhere, any forum that's been held so far, Pritzker's been asked about where he gets his money from, his taxes, his response is often, it's not about how much money I've made, it's what I've done with before anyone was looking. You know, it's the record that he has, even though not in public office, but in public service. Kennedy is much the same way, talking about, his wealth may not be the same as the Pritzker's, but talks about what he's been doing before this campaign. So as far as, is there a front runner? I think, you know, Pritzker's certainly got the endorsements from Democratic Party officials and organizations, but I wouldn't necessarily say that this primary is a lock for him yet. With Bruce Rauner on the Republican side, if you're looking at just Republican primary voters, there's State Representative Jeannie Ives, who is a Wheaton Republican in the State House, known to be very conservative to the point that some of her legislation doesn't even get support from her fellow Republicans, but that she introduces. But that said, there's a lot of frustrations with Rauner as the incumbent. I think it's going to be interesting to see how much traction Ives can get, having an abbreviated campaign schedule here for her, running a first-time statewide campaign. If history is any indication, though, she's going to have a very large uphill battle to take on Rauner, because incumbents tend not to lose statewide primaries in Illinois.
Shifting gears a little bit here, and Joe, you recently did a story for the Belleville News Democrat about what lawmakers are trying to do to keep more Illinois high school students from leaving the state for college. And, you know, and you're right there close to the border of Missouri, and you started off by talking to a student who is eligible to get in-state tuition in Missouri and could pay $4,000 less to go to school there than at the University of Illinois. Are stories like that common where you're at in Belleville?
You're right on the border. I talk to counselors, and their guidance counselors or school counselors. They're talking about, like, hey, all these they're seeing schools offering these out-of-state schools offering these special deals for communities, for students coming from communities in Illinois, and they're seeing if you could offer in-state tuition, you get that chance to go away, but still be kind of close. But you're also having Illinois schools are dealing with the reputation of it's going to be more expensive, and whether some of those programs are still going to be around, whether there's going to be funding for their majors down the line. Now, whether that's actually true is a whole other thing, but it's definitely a big challenge for Illinois schools. Now, Missouri schools, I think the University of Missouri is also now offering anyone from a border state a chance to come into the University of Missouri at in-state tuition, because they're trying to grow their enrollment as well. I mean, it's becoming a big competition just trying to keep enrollment up.
Yeah, and what universities in particular do you think this is really hurting, Joe? Because, you know, for us here in Champaign-Urbana, University of Illinois and its three campuses seem to be doing pretty well. Illinois State seems to be doing okay. What schools are really being hurt in the state by some of this outflow?
I think one of the ones you'll see a lot of is Southern Illinois and Carbondale. I think they're looking at cutting some staff as well. They've recently had to take a loan from SIU Edwardsville and had to repay that just to keep afloat. And so those are anything downstate is always going to be a challenge to keep their enrollment up.
Very good. And Joe, from the legislative side, what are some of the ideas that lawmakers might take up in the next session to try and address this issue?
Well, whether these get called up is another question. But I mean, there are three ideas that we wrote about. One was guaranteeing admission to students who are in the top 10% of their class and they have a certain SAT or ACT score, guaranteeing admission to a state university. One is forgiving student loan debt up to $30,000 over the course of 5 years if you study in the state and you stay in the state for a certain period of time. And one is a tax deduction on your income taxes for student loan interest. Now, whether any of those work is a whole other thing. I think when you're applying to college, I don't know if you're thinking about, boy, if I could get a student loan deduction on my income tax return every year, that might be an idea to keep it here. A student loan forgiveness program might work. People think, okay, I could, over the long term, I could keep my costs down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. We'll have to see what the legislature does in the upcoming session. Tony, back to you. I want to ask you about Congressman Luis Gutierrez. Last night, three Democratic sources told Politico that he will not seek another term, and he has a news conference scheduled at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Gutierrez has been in office for 24 years and has been a really big advocate for immigrant rights. For listeners outside of Chicago, what's his role been in Congress and in the Democratic Party in Illinois?
It's really been just that immigration has been the backbone of Gutierrez's career in Congress. He's been sort of the go-to nationally from congressmen to talk about this issue, and I think he was pretty frustrated that something bigger didn't get done during Obama's years in the White House. That said, he's known in Chicago for representing this district that is it looks like it's been gerrymandered like no other district because it's such an unusual shape. It's just this kind of elongated C. That said, it's designed to represent Latino neighborhoods, so that there's a Latino representative in Congress. And Gutierrez has filled that role for the last 25 years. So this has been a little bit of a surprise. The rumors started flying last night that kind of out of the blue that Gutierrez was going to be giving up his seat and not running for re-election after all, considering it was a surprise, considering just as recently as last week he was one of the congressmen saying that Donald Trump should be impeached. This is not expected to go very far because Democrats are not in control of Congress, but he was one of them saying that he would be bringing that. So there's already been, and I think the other thing to say here is about Gutierrez is he's been around politics for a very long time, started out as a Chicago alderman, then went to Congress. He has also apparently selected as who he would like to see replace him in Congress. I don't know that it's going to be quite that much of a given. I think there's going to be a primary here, but he's expected to endorse Cook County Commissioner Chuy Garcia later this afternoon to replace him. Garcia, you may remember, ran against Rahm Emanuel in the last Chicago mayor's election and forced Emanuel into a runoff. So Emanuel ultimately won. But there's another Chicago alderman, Carlos Ramirez Rosa, who has also said that he expects to he'll be forming a campaign here very shortly on a very accelerated time frame to try to make the ballot to be in the primary.
Well, certainly politics in Illinois is never dull, and we're always glad to catch up with Joe Bustos from the Belleville News Democrat and Tony Arnold, political reporter for WBEZ. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Moline. Think about the last time you used your phone or your computer. Chances was it was just minutes ago. Now imagine if that experience was slower, or if you were prevented from visiting your favorite website or from using your favorite app. Well, in just a few weeks, we could all experience some big changes to how we use the web. The Federal Communications Commission is set to repeal Obama-era regulations on Internet service providers. It's commonly known as net neutrality, and it's the idea that a company connecting you to the Internet should not get to decide what loads and how fast you can get it. This is largely a Republican-backed appeal and one supported by the FCC chairman, Ajit Pai. Here he is speaking on Morning Edition.
I'm in the somewhat unusual position as a Republican chairman of the FCC to say that President Clinton got it right in 1996 when he established a free market-based approach to this new thing called the Internet. And the Internet economy we have is a result of his light-touch regulatory vision. We saw $1.5 trillion of investment in networks. We saw companies like Facebook and Amazon and Google become global powerhouses precisely because we had light-touch rules that applied to this Internet. And the Internet wasn't broken in 2015 when these heavy-handed regulations were adopted. And once we remove them, I think we'll continue to see the infrastructure investment that will benefit digital consumers and entrepreneurs alike.
So how will this affect regular users of the Internet? April Glazer has been following the net neutrality debate as a technology journalist for Slate. She's on the line now. April, welcome to the 21st.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. When we hear this term net neutrality, April, what does it actually mean?
Well, net neutrality is actually a concept, right, which has been enshrined in some policies at the FCC that Ajit Pai is trying to repeal. But it's the concept that all traffic that travels over Internet providers' networks should be treated equally. So that means that it should take the same amount of time to reach a local news website as it would to reach CNN.com.
Okay. And let's go through a little bit of this timeline. As we just talked about, FCC Chairman Pai has proposed to vacate the rules that were enacted by former President Obama. The five commissioners of the FCC will vote on this in December. And so what are these Obama-era internet regulations that Chairman Pai wants to change?
Sure. So the rules that he's trying to repeal or rescind actually prevented internet providers that you pay every month to get the internet, like Comcast or Verizon and AT&T, from charging websites a fee to reach users faster, right? So under the current rules, let's say Yelp couldn't pay to reach you faster than the independent website of a local children's museum, right? You'd reach the reach them both at the same time. Without those rules, large incumbents like Facebook or Google or already successful brands or companies would be able to pay for faster access to users and then make those smaller companies much harder to reach.
Okay. Now, back in May, when President Trump appointed Pai to run the agency, he proposed that these rules be gutted, and he asked for public comment. What was the reaction?
Sure. So Pai has been, you know, staunchly objected to these rules for a long time since they were first enacted and voted against them back under the Obama administration. And so then, of course, when he was appointed FCC chairman, this was one of his first orders of business. He proposed to rescind the rules, opened a public comment period, and he was flooded with comments. The network neutrality proceeding has actually been the most commented on proceeding in the FCC's history. There's a lot of interest in this. 22 million comments have poured into the agency on this issue. Now, unfortunately, the process of taking in these public comments has been marred by really serious irregularities, right? So we've found, researchers have found that bots have just completely flooded the system. And not just like forms that you use to comment to the FCC through an advocacy website, but actually automated responses that are not sent by people, right? So we don't even have people weighing in. There's also been names of dead people that have showed up on the rolls. And the overwhelming amount of this automated activity and the activity that's from fraudulent posters has actually been against network neutrality. The organic comments, which are the vast majority of the comments, like over 90%, way over 90% rather, have actually been from people. There's also was a cyber attack that the FCC said happened to its system that is currently actually being investigated by a government affairs office. And so this entire process since May has had a lot of discrepancies that some people, including Commissioner of the FCC, Jessica Rosenworcel, has said means that it's time to actually, for the FCC to press pause, not move forward with rescinding the rules. There was too many problems with the comment process. And, you know, maybe the FCC should hold hearings now or reconsider the entire process before just completely undoing these regulations that took years to pass.
What's the timeline on the public comments? Are they closed now?
Sure. So the public comments are closed now. And last week, in a really wonderful news dump, so we were all scurrying to get to our families as journalists, but we had to stop to write, which is good, actually, to write about this. But it was a news dump on Thanksgiving. Chairman Pai released his proposal that the FCC will vote on in 3 weeks on December 14th to rescind the rules, and it is a majority FCC. Now, people can still, it's a majority Republican FCC, and the majority is expected to go along with Pai's proposal to rescind the rules. The public can still comment on the docket, but those comments will probably no longer be considered, within the current proceeding. So the rules could be voted to be rescinded in 3 weeks. Then in about a month or so, they'll show up on the, or rather in a few weeks, they'll show up on the Federal Register. And then about 30 days after that, they'll be enacted. So, you know, in as soon as the end of January 2018, the network neutrality rules could be rescinded and ISPs could be able to enact paid prioritization.
Yeah, and can you give us some examples of ways in which people might feel these changes, next year or months or years from now?
Sure. So, you know, when one website loads faster than another, you navigate to the other website, right? You get kind of exasperated or bored and you open a new tab and go away. It's essentially a form of censorship. And the internet actually, you know, right now is already pretty consolidated and it's already hard for, you know, new companies to break in. But the internet of the future could be even more consolidated, because once these companies are able to pay the big incumbents and set the prices for faster access to users and pay for those fast lanes, smaller companies probably, won't be able to afford the same prices that these large incumbents can already pay, and they'll be enshrining their dominance. And so the internet of the future will have a lot less possibilities potentially, right? Like, instead of having 1,000 flowers blooming where anybody can start a business or a blog, and although that might still happen, that business or a blog might just completely wallow away. Nobody will see it. And the incumbents that are able to pay for fast lane access and set the prices for those fast lanes will get continue to get the majority of the traffic, and there'll be fewer possibilities for a vibrant future. And so the internet of the future could be a lot more boring. We might see a lot less local restaurant websites, and instead, they'll just go to Yelp and stop making their own website altogether, right? And then, Yelp ranks reviews based on perhaps who pays them to show up, or Google might, rank their listings based on who pays to show up on the map. We might see a much less organic internet and much less possibilities for startups, new businesses, and local businesses to have a place of their own.
So what's the argument for scrapping net neutrality regulations then here? What's Chairman Pai hoping to achieve?
Pai says that he wants to spur investment in building out broadband networks. There's still large swaths of America that do not have access to a reliable broadband connection. It's something like in the 30% range of, American adults still don't have like a reliable access to broadband. That's a huge problem. And he contends, in some ways that if ISPs like Comcast or AT&T and Verizon are able to make more money by charging websites to access users, then they'll invest more in their networks and building out their networks. Now, the problem with this argument, though, is that although the network neutrality rules were passed in 2015, we have not seen Comcast or Verizon or AT&T say that they have been spending or investing less in building out their networks. In fact, on their investor calls, they've said multiple times that they are investing more in their networks and making their networks more robust. Now, of course, maybe they'd invest even more if it wasn't for those 2015 rules, but maybe they would invest even more if it wasn't for the 2016 election. There are so many reasons why. Pai's argument that it would spur investment is, could be true in one scenario, but it certainly hasn't deterred them from building out their networks even with those rules enacted. So it doesn't seem like a strong argument in any way.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Moline. We've been talking with April Glazer from Slate about net neutrality and proposed changes that may go into effect in December. And whenever a debate about this issue comes up, there's a question of, well, what about communities where there is limited access to the Internet and limited choice for Internet providers? We touched on that just a moment ago, but let's bring Melissa Gardner into the conversation. She's the president of the Illinois Library Association based at the Palatine Public Library District. Melissa, welcome to The 21st.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Of course, many of us have internet at home and in our pockets on our phones, but the library is still the primary source of internet for a lot of people, right?
That's true.
And so, from your perspective as a librarian, how concerning would a rollback to net neutrality be?
Well, as a librarian, we care about equitable access. We care about freedom of information. And we support net neutrality because we are concerned that our patrons won't receive access to unbiased information.
So from your perspective, the concern is more about access than it is money?
It's both. Here in Illinois, we have a wide diversity of libraries. In the Illinois Library Association, over half of our institutional members are small or low-budget libraries. If they can't afford access to the Internet, they may be the only source of Internet for their community.
What have you talked with your patrons about, about how their usage might be affected?
I explain it in a similar way to what April said. If one thing is going faster than another, your Internet service provider could decide basically what you see. Mm-hmm. They could make small local businesses could go slower. If they want to promote some sort of streaming network, their own streaming network, that might go faster than, say, Netflix. And then you would end up using that because it was faster and easier to access.
Sure. And we mentioned, Melissa, that you're based in Palatine. Is that a relatively large library compared to most of them in the state?
Yeah, Palatine is on the larger side. We serve 90,000 people and have a budget of 6 million. When I talk about those, half of those institutional members that are smaller, they have budgets under 500,000.
Okay. And how could this issue particularly affect young people?
I have kids myself. I have three kids, and they use the internet. They use tablets and computers to do their homework every night. They access all kinds of things, and that's how they connect to each other.
Okay. I should also mention here that the Illinois Library Association is supporting the American Library Association's statement on upholding net neutrality, as this is so far a federal issue. We'll tweet out that statement for those who might be interested. And Melissa, what about small towns, rural communities that we touched on briefly there with April a couple of minutes ago? Perhaps some of these places have limited choices for an internet provider. FCC Chairman Pai has said the solution to this problem is not more regulation, but more competition. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
My dad lives in a small town in Illinois, and he lives in El Paso, Illinois. And for him, he doesn't have internet access at home. And the two places that he goes to access the internet are the library and McDonald's. So for him, obviously, and many people across Illinois like him, it's very important that we have net neutrality so that people can access the internet.
Is this echoing other concerns that you've heard from all across the country?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
And April, let's bring you back in here. Some of the concerns that Melissa's talked about here from her role as a librarian. Is this pretty similar to what you're hearing from people across the country, April?
Yeah, people are deeply concerned that, the internet by next year could be a very different place. I mean, on the homework example that was brought up by the previous guest, imagine if your kids are doing homework and they're looking for research and they're looking online at all these different sources, and the connection to their library that has all these great resources is actually slower than some, corporate news website that has a particular agenda, or, a private company that is, supplying information. That prioritization of that information could make everyone's homework assignment look the same because everybody has faster access to one source than another, right? It could make it harder to find obscure sources or more difficult things. You're looking for jobs, and, maybe Monster.com will pay for that fast access to reach you, but more local listings or other types of listings won't. There's really no telling how it will affect how we access information, only that it certainly will.
And there seems to be another issue here as well, April. And we've been talking about the fast lanes and slow lanes, but what about the fact that there just seem to be so few internet service providers now? We talked about lack of options, and it's not just in small towns. I think right now I basically have two options for broadband internet where I live, in a fairly large community. What about all the consolidation and everything that we're seeing with internet service providers right now?
The majority of Americans have one option. Some, many have two when it comes to high-speed broadband internet, right? And so this argument that, the market will kind of play things out and everything will be fair in the end doesn't really make sense because, there's nowhere for you to go if you don't like the fact that Comcast is slowing down your connection. Or maybe you'll go to Verizon, but they're doing it too, right? And so without really a plural market or more options, then any argument saying that that these providers will ultimately do the right thing in the end because of competition just doesn't play out because there's not competition there. Now, some communities do have more competition, but even so, if it's just a handful, they could all do the same thing.
April Glazer has been covering net neutrality issues and other technology issues for Slate, and Melissa Gardner is the president of the Illinois Library Association. April and Melissa, thanks so much for joining us today on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Still Still to come on the 21st, we'll check in on some not-so-good football in Chicago and Champaign-Urbana with Cheryl Ray Stout from WBEZ. Stay with us. You're listening to the 21st.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
Thanks for joining us for the 21st. I'm Brian Moline.
Trubisky on fourth down. Will go far side. Tip intercepted by Graham. Inbounds. Could go. Graham. Inside the 20.
That's Bears rookie quarterback Mitch Trubisky at the end of a rough Sunday. The Bears got pummeled by the Eagles 31-3 on Sunday and clinched their fourth straight losing season. It's been a tough year for the Bears, but probably not all that unexpected. Football season is in full swing, both in college and the pros, and so now is basketball season. I'm joined on the line to talk about all this with WBEZ sports contributor Cheryl Ray Stout. Cheryl, welcome back to the 21st.
Good morning.
We may not want to, Cheryl, but we have to start with the Bears. is this about where we expected them to be this season?
Probably so. With all the injuries that they had during training camp, especially with the wide receivers, you knew this would be an issue right now, especially with a young quarterback and Mitchell Trubisky. But to be this bad like they were last Sunday, I don't know if they were going to be that bad.
Certainly losing consistently has to be hard for any pro athlete, even if you're somewhat expecting it. But do you think the team chemistry seems to be holding up still with all of this happening?
Well, I think it's starting to fracture because yesterday there was a yelling match between players in the hallway that media was able to hear. So I think there's some fraying going on. That's expected because the way they lost, it was a brutal loss. And so when your team is this bad and you're pretty darn sure that your coach is going to be fired at the end of the year, that's when things start to really implode.
Sure. And of course, there's a lot of pressure on Mitch Trubisky, the rookie quarterback. He was the second pick in the NFL draft. How's his first season been going?
It's been uneven. This last game, you got to throw it away because Philadelphia is such a so much better than the Bears are at this point. But if you look at the two previous games, he played well. He put them in positions to win. You know, the game against Detroit, he got them in a two-minute drill. Actually, it was a minute 33 left of the game. He was able to drive them downfield to get into a field goal position to tie the game up. The kicker missed it, but he did a good job with it. You're seeing these glimpses of him being able to throw on first down. He's got to learn to do things like throwing the ball out of bounds instead of taking a sack. But those are things, by having these experiences right now, should bode well for him going forward. And also, if they get a new offensive coordinator, that should be interesting.
Yeah, and overall, you mentioned Trubisky has a bright future, but are there some other promising young players on the Bears? How does the future look overall?
Well, there's a couple young players. Tariq Cohen, he is a spark plug. He's a really terrific player. Jordan Howard, one of the best runners in the game. So you've got these little pieces here. On defense, they've got some really good players there. Eddie Jackson's going to be a really good player. He's the kid out of Alabama who had a couple interceptions in one game recently. There's some bright spots. Leonard Floyd, who got hurt, you know, he has knee injury now. He's been making strides. They do have players. They have some good pieces. They just don't have everything together at this point. The concerns also the offensive line with Kyle Long has had these injuries, and he's your best offensive lineman, so he's got to get well. Their center Cody White here, very very solid player, plays that position well, but they've had to move him around because of Kyle Long's injury. So as long as he stays at center, they're in good shape. Again, I'm not, you know, these are pieces. They're not, you don't see whole, you know, like a whole team that's good, but pieces.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the NFL overall. Certainly, there's been a lot of news about kneeling during the national anthem to protest police brutality. In the meantime, Colin Kaepernick, one of the players at the center of that controversy, has signed a lucrative book deal, but he still hasn't been signed to a team. Is some of that still just looming over the NFL season?
I think that's there. I mean, he is suing the owners over this because there is belief that there's collusion involved. Because if you look at some of the players that had been signed as backups that are playing, and Colin Kaepernick took a team to a Super Bowl. He also, his stats for, you know, his overall stats compare better than a lot of these quarterbacks that are playing right now. So you look at that, you go, well, why not give him a try? Why not, you know, let him, you know, play? But I think teams at this point have made that decision. They're not going to bring him on. I believe it was Baltimore that thought about it, and then the owner nixed it. So with that in mind, you have to wonder if that collusion did exist.
Let's move on a little bit to college football for a second. Here in Illinois, U of I got thumped pretty good by Northwestern 42-7 on Saturday. I'm assuming that wasn't a particularly surprising result, Cheryl?
No, I mean, because you got Northwestern that's been on a roll. You know, they're going to get a good bowl opportunity this year. But Levy Smith, with his Illini team, he's playing his freshman players. These are his guys. These are the players he recruited. And so you're going to have to take your lumps with that. However, you know, it's hard for Illini fans to watch it. I guess the fact is that nobody's going to watch the games is a problem at this point. But that's what's going to happen when you have that school has had so much turmoil before Levy got there that he has to smooth things out. You know, they lost three players yesterday. One of them was Trey Watson. He's transferring out. You know, you've got another couple of the players transferring out because they weren't played, or they know that, you know, they're not going to, the writing's on the wall for them. So it's a team that's going to have to, the fans are going to have to bite the bullet and let Levy Smith and his staff develop this young team.
Yeah, and it does sound like athletic director Josh Whitman will be patient with Levy Smith as he tries to turn this thing around. What are you hearing from some Illini fans in Chicago?
You know what, I've heard a lot of them, you know, they liken it to like almost like the Cubs. You know, you had to reach rock bottom and then, you know, things will be better. They know that things have been bad, and they know that you have to be patient. But, you know, we're not in a patient society. We have social media that make, you know, that really feeds you the frenzy of fans. But the most Illini fans I've talked to, they're fine with the process right now.
And that, you know, and you mentioned the Cubs. Any thought that, you know, the upside for the Illini could be that high?
I don't know if it could be that high. I think it's very hard to compete, especially not just you know, in the state, but the Big Ten. It's hard to compete, but you know, you want to get to respectability. You want to get to 6 to 7 wins within a year or two. You want to be able to be competitive for the Big Ten championship. You know, if you get that in maybe 3 years, you've really done the job. But I think in the next year or two, you want to at least get 6 or 7 wins.
Okay. And meanwhile, we mentioned Northwestern, and after a slow start to their season, Pat Fitzgerald has guided them to another winning season. Has there been any word yet, any chatter about where the Wildcats could be headed for their bowl game?
There's one or two bowl games I'm hearing. I'm hearing the Citrus Bowl or the Music City Bowl. So they're going to be in a nice situation. You know, look at what he's done, Pat Fitzgerald. You know, after they stubbed their toe to begin the season, and then they went 7 straight, 3 overtime wins in a row. That was unbelievable. And Justin Jackson, he's one of the best runners in NCAA history. He's got over 5,000 yards for his career. They are a team, you know, compared to Illinois, they are Illinois' team right now, Northwestern, the way they performed. But that's the gold standard for Illinois to reach.
Okay. You know, certainly it can be hard to keep up with everything that's going on in college football. A lot of the conference championship games are coming up this weekend. Who's facing off in the Big Ten title game?
That's Wisconsin and Penn State. Wisconsin is undefeated. They are in the college football playoff bracket right now. So if they could beat Ohio State, they're going to go to the championship series. That's a big game, and no one thinks that Wisconsin is a strong team. This will prove it to them if they could beat Ohio State. They're an underdog, But Wisconsin's got one of the best defenses in the country, and they also have an outstanding running back in Jonathan Taylor. So that's going to be a great game on Saturday.
Yeah, it should be interesting. And then, of course, some of the other conference title games coming up as well will have a big say in this. The SEC championship game, quite a game over the weekend between Auburn and Alabama, with the Tigers knocking off the number one Crimson Tide. So Auburn and Georgia in the SEC title game, is that right?
Yeah, that's going to be, whoever wins that is going to probably be ranked number one, because those are two unbelievable teams. Georgia's had some big wins this year. These title games, it's a shame because, you only have four teams in the playoffs. They should expand the playoffs, but I know they can't because of the way, school goes and everything. But to only have four teams in the mix for the championship doesn't seem fair, does it?
Yeah, it certainly would be entertaining if they could expand that. And then you've got the ACC title game where you've got Miami and Clemson facing off the number two and number three teams in the country. Let's move on a little bit here. But first, we did get a Twitter comment I'd like to share with you. We got a comment from Steve Davis on Twitter saying that his wife is related to Mrs. Ryan Pace, and therefore he's torn. He's a lifelong Packer fan, but he does want the Bears to improve a little bit and maybe even win that division title just once.
I think a lot of Bears fans would feel that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit of basketball here. We haven't talked much about this year's Chicago Bulls on the show, and that's partially because there hasn't been too much to say. It got even worse at the beginning of the season with Bulls player Bobby Portis punching his teammate Nikola Mirotic, breaking a bone in his face. What happened with that incident there, Cheryl?
From what we understand, they were both competing for the starting job, but the starting job was going to be given to Nikola Mirotic. He just re-signed as a free agent, two-year deal for $27 million. Bobby Portis has been a bench player, a former number one pick, never quite, measured up to be a number one pick. So they were jawing at each other. Apparently, Nikola was jawing as much as Bobby was to him, and at some point he punched him. Bobby Portis punched him in the face, broke two bones in his face, gave him a concussion. Here's the interesting scenario. Mirotic cannot be traded until January 15th, and apparently he has proposed it's either me or him. As of yesterday, Nikola Mirotic finally was on the court with a regular practice, but has yet to speak to Bobby Portis, is not playing with him. So it's going to be interesting. They have to make a decision at this point because they're going to start traveling with him. He's going to start traveling with the team to Denver for Thursday's game. So you're going to be in a plane. You're going to be in small quarters. But it's going to be interesting to see how management handles it. They're trying to be very, cautious, and they're trying to do the best thing for the team as far as John Paxson is concerned. But it's not unusual that players have had issues. I've seen things happen before. Michael Jordan punched Will Perdue, and Michael Jordan punched Steve Kerr. But it was Michael Jordan, not Bobby Portis.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit different there. The Bulls are 3-15, not exactly off to a great start. They traded their best player, All-Star Jimmy Butler, last year. They're very much rebuilding. Any bright spots on this team?
Yes, there's a few. In fact, because of the Bobby Portis and Nikola Mirotic scrimmage, their number one pick, Lauri Markkanen, the 7-foot forward from Arizona, he was their number one draft pick, was part of that trade that they got with Minnesota. He has really shown that he belongs in the league. He's developed. He's got a good outside shot. He can play some defense. The other thing is that there's some other players. We're going to see Zach LaVine should be coming back. He is also a player that was part of the Jimmy Butler trade, who suffered a knee injury in February. He's now practicing with the team. He should be back in a couple of weeks. So there's some bright spots there with those couple of players. What Fred Hoiberg has to do is develop some of these players. They're not going to win. They don't want to win because they want to have a high draft pick at the end of the year. But developing these players is going to be very important. And when they had that huge loss against Golden State this week, when they lost by 49 points, that was devastating. But they did come back in their next game two nights ago, and they at least performed better. So it's these small moral victories that this team is trying to attain at this point.
Very good. That's WBEZ sports contributor Cheryl Ray Stout. Cheryl, great talking with you as always.
You're welcome.
And that's all the time we have for today. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Just search for The 21st, and we're also available on iTunes and Android. If you have Alexa, we're easy to find. Just tell Alexa, ask NPR One to play The 21st. All of those links, directions for Alexa, and every other way to contact us via phone, email, or social media is at our website, 21stshow.org. Follow us on Twitter. Search for 21stshow. We live tweet during the show with more analysis and background about what we're discussing. On our Facebook page, search for The 21st to like us. You can comment on what we're working on or post questions or comments that you want us to ask on air. We're produced by Robin Lynn, Alan Montecilio, and Bob Holly. Libby Foster and Grace Stetson are our interns. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. So thanks to the University of Illinois' Social Media Analytics Lab for their research help, and special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Brian Moline, filling in for Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks so much for listening.